Thompson, my man. Des.
Hello, sir.
Twice in one day, Thompson.
I know, lucky me.
This is it. Mr. George is in. How are you feeling, brother? You okay?
Better. A week
Good.
off definitely works.
Good, man.
Yeah,
Thanks.
all
No.
good.
Fam, she's in. Paul, good to see you, man. Al. How we doing, man? Give us an update. I've heard some good things about your training and your competitions recently.
Hey, Coach Gavin. We're rolling. We're preparing for World Championships coming up here in 3 weeks. Heading over to Greece, Sparta, Greece, back to the motherland.
I
Yeah.
heard, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Have you found the training and the competition sort of coming together? How's that been for you?
Great. Yeah, super helpful from mass intervals to all the mobility and a lot of new exercises that I'm logging in True Coach to Coach Andrews. And this is a new one for me, but I love it. I'm always, looking for his guidance, and he's always got some great cues and tips. So things that are helping me with mobility, hips, knees, ankles, everything I need to do to prepare for these crazy races.
Good, man. Good. Like Andrew's a wealth of knowledge, man. Like, I don't know whether a few of you guys know, but being an ex, well, he's probably still an athlete, to be fair. Like, his knee might not be giving him that information right now, but his knee's getting better. But Andrew's a phenomenal athlete, so he's a wealth of experience for that side of things as well. So make sure you pick his brain on some of these calls too. He's absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely.
But yeah, man, we're rooting for you. I'll keep up the good work, brother.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Just letting Keith in. I'm seeing Keith. I've got to message Keith back actually when he gets on this call. Paul, man, give us an update of the week, man. Give us a good any good wins this week so far? We're hitting Wednesday, but how's the this week gone and last week? Anything good coming up for you?
It's been perfectly fine. Just the coaching cues that I've gotten the past few weeks, form has been better in the video, so I'm getting to where I can start increasing weight with that.
Nice, man. Which exercises specifically have started to improve you?
Flat dumbbell bench press, had to correct tempo and go down in a way to increase range of motion and lateral shoulder raise.
Nice, man. So you're looking to fill out the chest a little bit more, yeah?
Yep.
Good, man. Good. Des, give us an update, brother.
Yeah, just still working on opening up the hips. Actually started swimming 2 or 3 weeks ago. I've never really swam before, so that's been a kind of deep dive in, unfortunately. So I've been kind of learning how to kick my legs and stuff like that, so to help
Yeah,
improve
tough.
hip mobility. So yeah, nice to get out of the comfort zone.
Nice, man. We'll maybe go through some. I know what your coach is going to have your back on that as well in terms of flexibility and mobility routines. But if we can unpack anything after we start to go through these weekly splits, I'm going to talk about later on today, later on in this call. There's some deep stuff we're going to go into. I'm going to try and keep it as concise and as informational as possible, but there can be some tangents that I might end up going on because I love programming, so you'll start to see how my brain works on a few things. I know
Nice.
George and Thompson have all that at hand right now, and I know George has been a little bit sort of run down recently, but this I'm actually enjoying the fact that he's run down because I hope George, I hope you don't mind. I'm going to share with the guys a little win for me about our recent
Please.
issue we've had this week. So George came into the program, and when he came in, he was obviously you want to put on muscle mass, get in shape, improve athletic ability and health and so on. But he was having trouble getting consistency with his training because he was breaking down a lot, right? So he was getting issues in his body where he's got
Burnout.
fatigue, burnout. Yeah, burnout. It takes like a week or 2 weeks. So we've been very methodical in the way we've programmed a few things. Obviously keeping in touch with each other, literally, and I mean, I'm talking like every day. Like he will update me every day without fail. He's an absolute legend. We've got a great relationship, and we started programming things through where we would really we enable him to, or we work together on getting him to work out for 4 weeks on the trot. Then we would take like a break and download him a little bit. We managed to build that up to 8 weeks. And on the eighth week, we would take a what we call a parasympathetic week. So it wasn't that he wasn't doing anything. It was just the activity he was doing was very parasympathetic, right? So it's like recovery-based, adaptive capacity-based. Now, George loves a trip to New York every year. This is one of his annual things that he does. He goes to see the tennis, but we typically have that as a parasympathetic week. This time, he like rode probably how God knows how many hours on his bike. He likes biking as well. But this man hits 25K steps a day without fail on a normal day. Like the guy's a machine. So this parasympathetic week wasn't technically a parasympathetic week. And he messaged me the other morning. He's like, Gav, I'm taking a week off. Like, I need that week. Like, something's happening. I've come down with the flu and so on. And I look back through his True Coach, and we've gone 17 weeks without a parasympathetic week. So that is absolutely remarkable. Like, with the effort that he puts in terms of allowing himself to recover and putting things in to make sure the routine is set. So what we're doing is allowing him to keep moving forward in his training. Like, the man's put on so much lean mass over the past year. He's done exceptionally well. We're starting to, Paul, we're starting to bring up George's chest as well and the upper body. He's got a serious set of pins on him. We're putting power into the pins as well at the moment. So we're going to see how they perform in Costa Rica. But yeah, it's going to be fun. But like, that's a fantastic win for me, for you, George. Like, I tip my cap to you, man. Like,
all because of you, Gav. All because of you. Thank you.
But I'll put this forward though, boys, like with your coach, like update them daily if you can, like if you need to as well. Like, don't be shy and saying, look, I'm struggling with this. George will be the first one. This is what's going on. Give me some feedback, give me some guidance. And we always sort of navigate those things, you know? So as much as you can, get on the blower to your coach, okay? Keith, good to see you, man. You're looking well.
Trying, Gav, trying, mate.
Hey, I actually spoke to Greg in the car, maybe today actually, about the London trip. So Thompson, I spoke to him today as well, so we might be getting together. I've got a trip to Tampa next week. Fingers crossed. I know there's a bit of a hurricane hit in there today, so we're going to see how that goes over the next couple of days. But I should be there next week for a couple of weeks. And then when I get back, I'll know my schedule a little bit more. And then if I can, I want to plan a couple of days in London with you two boys, okay?
Awesome, man. That'd be great.
Good. John, good to see you, man.
Same.
How you holding up, brother? You okay?
Yeah, last week was bad. I had a UTI and couldn't train for a week.
Oh, that season up now.
I was on Cipro. I'm off of it tomorrow, and I'm able to resume training.
Good, man. Good. Get after it, man. I'm sure Greg's looking after you too, yeah?
Yes, he is.
Good work, man.
We talked this morning.
Good. Well, gents, I know you're on to hear all the best things about which training split you should be doing to get maximal results. So I want to put forward to you boys and Andrew again. I'm not going to pull out the presentation today. I normally come up with a presentation, but I want to go not off the cuff. I've got a structure. I'm not going to go off on too many tangents. I am structured. But if there's any questions, Andrew, if you can jump into the chat and just ping them out in case I miss them, okay? I'd like to get some thoughts on where you guys are with what you enjoy training first. So if there was a weekly split that you would want to do for the rest of your life, that you, or even when you think about going into the week, like this is a split I could do no problem at all. Like, I have one myself. I'll share that with you in a second, but I enjoy a specific training split that when I'm on it, I'm like, this is fantastic. And there are certain splits that I'm like, they're okay, but I'll do them because I need to do them for a specific reason, right? So there's these types of things that I want to get across to you first before we start going into ideals. And what I'm going to share with you today is my like ideal scenarios in what you want from that training result or that goal that you're moving towards, right? So just give me, you're going to meet yourselves, like maybe one at a time. If someone starts, then let them run. And then as that someone's talking, just put the rest in the chat. But give me some idea of like, one, your favorite training split, or two, that you've hit the most in your life, the ones you enjoy the most. Back and legs. So you enjoy training those body parts, John, yeah? Okay, so if that's the case, what would that week look like for you if you're going to hit back and legs? Would it be like a back day and then a leg day?
I think legs is usually combined with shoulders. And then I tend to do upper body minus the shoulders, so chest with some back done together.
Okay. Perfect. So what I'm talking about with the week is like how many days per week would you train, and what part of that day would you hit in that session?
Well, my training is a little bit different because I'm training as a CrossFit athlete as opposed to a
Right, okay.
bodybuilder.
Got you.
So there's going to be a couple cardio-based, skill-based days, and then there's going to
Perfect.
be so all together between cardio and work and body weight parts, it's going to be 5 to 6 days a week.
Nice. Perfect. So you got 5 or 6 days a week. Now this will go into certain other splits that might be a different to muscle building goals, right? Because now we've straight out of the gate, we've gone, well, what is the goal? So is the goal muscle building? Am I a CrossFit athlete? Am I an athlete that's getting ready for a powerlifting competition, or I'm an athlete that goes on the field that needs speed development? Do I need fat loss? Am I looking for maximal strength? So all of those things will dictate predominantly how many days you can train, but also the other factor we have to consider after the goal is what is my adaptive capacity, like we just covered with George. So how much capacity do you have to adapt to that training stimulus? Can you recover and hit it again? Does that make sense?
Yes, I think I can. I mean, one of the goals we're working on right now is building upper body strength and size, because that was the one thing that kept me from. I made it to quarterfinals in the CrossFit Games last year, and the goal this year is to get up to the semifinals.
Looks like Gavin's frozen.
Sounds like he's frozen, or he's really good at holding still.
Nice. So what are you assessing your limiting factor right now, John? Is it actually strength or is it muscle?
I think it's strength. My limiting factor in competition this last year was shoulder strength.
Don't worry, boys, I'm back. Hold on. Get back in the house. You got me now?
Yes.
Sorry, gents. The Wi-Fi went in my gym, so I'm back in the house. Let's go to work. Fill me back in, John.
So I said, I'm kind of in a power strength. I'm kind of in a muscle power upper building strength while making sure that I don't lose skills that I need for competition. But I felt like what held me back from making semis last year was my upper body shoulder explosive strength, because it affected my handstand pushups and my snatches.
Perfect. Okay, so that's some great info, right? That's great feedback. So what we have to consider now is what then would be the limiting factors for overhead press. So we have to go into, well, how much mobility do I need potentially? How much maximal strength do I need? And I might do another talk on this on another Wednesday where we'll look at how we actually improve explosive strength, because there's specific methods that we might use. And there's specific numbers you want to hit for strength ratios before you start looking at putting in those speed strength elements for explosive strength. So that would then translate to your handstand pushups and so on too. So that's some great insights. So now you've got to think, well, do I need two maximal strength days? Do I then need two ex like speed strength days? And on the back end of both of those, do I do any type of WODs to keep my conditioning levels up? So you're doing more of a concurrent style weekly split. So you're in the gym quite a lot in the week, but you have to mitigate a lot of the training volume so you can recover from that as well. Just it needs smart programming to do that, man. So I know you got a good coaches working with you too, so I'm sure they're covering that.
I'm pretty confident in my coaches.
Yeah, mate, you are where you are for a reason, man. You got a good team behind you. In the chat, I think we've got Mohammed. If he's got his camera off, I think. Mohammed, good to see you. Good to hear from you, man. Good to see you now as well, brother. So you've got upper body and lower body days, yeah? So you alternate those.
Yeah,
Give us.
upper body day, lower body day, the third day either rest or cardio, then repeat again with different emphasis each time. So maybe focus more on push on the first upper body day and a little bit more on pull, and then focus more on quads, and then the other day focus more on hamstring. I still try to hit the whole thing, but with different emphasis each time.
Yeah. So Greg's working with you currently, right? And
Correct.
that's the similar setup that Greg's got you on.
Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah. But to be honest, it's one of, if you're looking at long term, it's one of my favorite splits, like long term strength development and muscular hypertrophy development. It's one of my favorites because you can, when we go into the numbers in a second, you'll see why I like that type of split as well. So you'll see the numbers in terms of how many exposures you get to a body part over the year. I think I might have shared this with you in the past. So like Keith, that's going to be very similar for you. But when we're looking at like ideals or what you've used before, there has to be elements of one, what you do enjoy. So that's why I asked, well, what do you enjoy doing? Like one question we typically ask is, or one conversation I do like to ask people is, name a time when you had the best workout of your life. Like what did that feel like? What was the session? Was it like, did you feel a big pump, or did you were you rolling around on the floor trying not to throw up? Because like some people like different styles of workouts, right? So do you ever train with Ben or any of us at a training muscle camp? George, I don't want to put you off too soon. And Thompson knows, but there might be elements of having a pump and feeling sick at the same time at certain points of that week. So we are going to sort of push people to limit certain points, but it's good fun, but it depends what people really enjoy. So we always want to keep that in mind, but we always want to look at, well, what is the optimal goal? So for example, if we think of fat loss, when somebody comes in for a fat loss goal and a fat loss target, it may be that we really need to improve their aerobic capacity first, or if somebody needs to improve their adaptive capacity. It might be that, sorry, let me, I've got some people coming into the room here a sec. So Chris Klass coming in. It might be that we need to improve their adaptive capacity. And typically what people tend to need to improve, good evening, Chris. People tend to need to improve their adaptive capacity is their aerobic capacity and their VO2 max. So to buffer stress, the more aerobically efficient you are, the more stress you can buffer, typically. So I know Thompson's going through a hell of a couple of weeks, the past couple of weeks. So Thompson wants to put on muscle mass. So Thompson's goal is hypertrophy. If Thompson is constantly stressed, so think about this. What does stress do to the body? Stress is a breaking down hormone. So it's good to have. We do need stress. And I'm not a thing that I don't think like stress is too bad in certain situations, but if it's chronically elevated, it's going to kick you in the balls. So we need to have things to allow one to buffer it, or two, we have to manage the amount of stress coming into the system. So we have to look at Thompson the past couple of weeks and go, Thompson's in a very stressful environment job-wise, in the type of work that he does and the company that he works for. And something can get thrown at him out of the blue, and he's got to deal with it. And that happened like for 2 weeks, and his workload went from like an 8 to 9 hour day to like a 14 to 16 hour day. It was absolutely crazy. So what do you think his adaptive capacity is to go into the gym the next morning after that long day and crush his hypertrophy workout the way I wanted it to? Low. Same thing with George, right? So George, very successful person in business and family, and he's got a lot going on. And the past few weeks before, it's even before his New York trip, we had a good talk the other week, and we discussed all the stresses that were going on in his life. I was like, wow, okay, we need to dial things down a bit and make like you're doing an exceptional job. There was a lot of stress going on there. So the adaptive capacity to adapt to the training stimulus there is then diminishing. And like Ben, you probably heard Ben say this, the walls are narrowing on you. It's like you've got minimal room to maneuver here. So once you can sort of downregulate certain things in your training and nutrition then to help support that, you can expand those walls a little bit, and all of a sudden you can breathe a little bit more, right? Because the last thing I want to do to poor Thompson is like, suck it up, buttercup. You gotta go do some work. Like that's what I want him to do. But if I keep getting him to do that, he's gonna break. right? And what's going to happen then? He's not going to stick to his diet. He's not going to be able to stick to his nutrition plan, right? So this is something that I consider when we're looking at fat loss. So aerobic capacity is going to be one thing. So we can buffer a lot of stress for sure, but also build up fitness. So if I really need to improve aerobic capacity, but I also need to keep all the muscle mass, there's a specific split that I typically use for that I know that I'm going to have the best optimal exposures for weight training to keep resistance training there, to have the muscle being stimulated enough through the week. And also I've got enough time to improve aerobic capacity. And that split is typically 3 times a week full body training, without doubt. Because the more I can frequently hit the muscle, the more protein synthesis I'm gauging on that muscle. So for me, if it's fat loss and you have to consider another thing, in a fat loss phase, we're going to be downregulating calories to a certain point of view. Sometimes I don't like huge calorie deficits. Sometimes I do, depending on what the person can control and what their mindset's like around food. How much time we've got. So if it's a short period, we got to go. Some things have to happen, and then we titrate those calories straight back up. But with that said, if you're in a deficit, you're more prone to lose muscle mass. So the one thing I do want to do is make sure that I'm training to keep it in that deficit. I'm being very successful in keeping all the muscle mass on people going through fat loss phases and putting it on too. So for me, fat loss, we start in my mind, my always go to, can we do 3 days a week full body training? And then can we do 3 days a week minimum of cardiovascular work? So that type of split for fat loss typically does the job. Now, as you get more advanced or more, you've done full body training for a while, then you might move to something like an upper lower split. Because essentially, you're still going to keep a good amount of muscle mass and actually add muscle mass in a deficit sometimes on both of those splits. I've got a lot of studies I was just been going through with Greg on my laptop where a study showing that you can actually gain muscle in a deficit if certain parameters are in place. So there has to be certain things going on too. It's not just you're going to grow muscle in a deficit. You have to be very stringent on nutrition and so on. But those are two splits that I always tend to revert back and forth with, is those. Now, I'll share my personal favorite split with you, and I'll show you how it's not too far off an upper lower split. But I love weight training. Hands down, I prefer weight training way over cardiovascular work. Raise your hand or do the like what the emoji thing here if you love weight training more than cardiovascular work. Okay. George is like that. I know George loves the bike. I don't know about Chris Clark. He's loving the lactic acid based training protocols I'm going through now. So Clark, he's an animal. We started training and we were doing high rep sets, and I won't tell you all the names under the sun he was calling me at the time, but we've sort of transitioned him over, and he's starting to enjoy these high rep sets, and he's starting to enjoy lactate based work, and his VO2 max has gone through the roof, like literally gone through the roof. But this guy can plow through training sessions now without a problem. Like he's a machine, an absolute machine. So I'm excited to see what he does in Costa Rica for sure. So my favorite split, I enjoy lifting weights and I want to do as much as possible in the week. So I found a split that I could train 5 days a week in the gym with weights that would hit the body, the muscles I want to hit twice per week. And the split would run push, pull, and then I would do legs. Then I would rest, and then I would do push again, and then my last day would be pull and legs. So it was more of a dense day. So that's where like rest periods are lower. I'll hit the cardiovascular system a little bit. There's a little bit more pump work involved in that. But essentially across the week, I've hit everything twice. Plus, I'm in the gym 5 times a week. So that for me, like if I'm pushing muscle, I'll typically run that split. If I've got calories high, I'll run that split. So this is where nutrition needs to balance really well with the split you're doing, right? So if I'm in the gym 5 times a week, I'm going to need way more carbohydrates. I'm going to need way more calories. Because I'm going to fuel hard weight training sessions. Whereas if I'm in a fat loss phase, like I am right now, getting ready for a few bits, I'm training 3 days a week full body. I'm doing lower repetitions and I'm doing more cardiovascular work. So I want to be more fat adapted. I've still got carbs coming in, but on my cardio days, I don't really need as many carbohydrates. So I can start to shift things around and move my nutrition based off the training split that I'm using. Does that make sense? And also, the nutrition is going to depend on how you can maneuver your week. So, hands up if you can meal prep for a couple of hours a day or an hour a day. Not many people can do that. Some people can, some people can't. I, luckily enough, I work in my home. I've got a gym in my garden. I've got a gym just down the road that I can go to. And I've got enough time in the day that I can make quick meals that I can go to here and there. Or you might need to get meal prep food, have it done for you. But I have the luxury to be able to do that with my food. Some people just need to do same thing every day. And that's totally fine too. And then we can gauge things on a different level. But the reason I do like to shift things around is because now I can predict metabolic flexibility at a better rate. Because if I want to push fatty acid oxidation faster, I'm going to bring my carbohydrates down. I'm going to push my zone two work. So that's what I'm currently doing. So I want to hit more cardiovascular work. I want to burn more fat. My weight training days, I don't want to risk any muscle loss in a deficit. So I push my carbohydrates up. My protein's high on every day anyway. My carbs are up on my weight training, so it's going to fuel the weight training, but it's also going to blunt the effect of muscle loss as well. Because obviously, if insulin's higher at those points when I'm training, that's going to negate the cortisol effect of breaking down. So it's being smart about what type of phase of training you're in, what is going to be the benefit of that phase, what is the goal? And then I can design the best split that's going to get the most optimal result for you. Or your coach is going to do that, right? So, any takeaways from that so far? Any questions? Mohammed, did I give you some insights into like, we'll go into upper lower splits in a second as well, because upper lower split can be very, very good and you can hit it in so many different ways as well. So, have you got any questions on that so far, Mohammed?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of insight and for fat loss phase, it's pretty interesting to try to incorporate 3 days of full body. I think when I started with Coach Greg, like one of the things that we established at the beginning is just to master the fundamental movements. And those were the days where we did like the full body.
Yeah.
And actually those were the days where I probably noticed most of my fat loss, because it was every day was a full body day. And a lot of compound movements, like so there was, and then the other days were cardio day, were like zone two for like an hour, so
Yep.
like similar to it, and that's where I noticed most of my fat loss. But in terms of enjoying, I enjoy more the part where I can do upper body, lower body, and then have a day. Like it's more enjoyable than having 3 days where it's really exhausting, it's really a tough workout.
Yeah. And those are, he's probably programmed some like GBC style workouts for you, right? So typically, what they'll look like is you'll pair upper and lower exercises together, very minimal rest periods in between. So it might be a quad and a back exercise paired together. No worry, Keith. Have a great day, man. Yeah, pairing those two together, you do 3, 4 sets, then you do your posterior chain, like hamstring and your push exercise paired together. Then you move on, do them again, but more isolated work. It's very taxing. But when we're talking fat loss, we want to be depleting as basically as many carbons in the body as possible. So what I mean by that is anything stored in the body is energy wise is stored as carbons. So if I want to reduce the amount of body fat that I have, my goal is to reduce as many carbons as possible out of the body from a deficit and as many muscle contractions as I can give. So what GBC does, it allows carbons to be broken down because reps are at a good moderate range, anywhere from ideally 8, can be 6, but 8 up to 20 reps. Typically, you can go that high. Minimal rest periods. Now, what that does, if you think about the old school training sessions called peripheral hard action. So what it's doing is if you're shifting upper to lower muscles that you're going to train, your heart has to work exponentially harder. So it's not just training biceps, right? You just doesn't have to work too hard to do that. You're doing multi-joint exercises. You're training your back, and then you're training your quads. So the body has to pump blood to both places within a short time frame. So your heart is working exponentially more. So it's very, very taxing. Now, the other thing to consider is when you're in a learning phase, it's taxing because if you were getting to like how many sets to true failure did you go? Now, you don't have to answer. I'll give you the thing that I see. I've trained clients for years on this type of method. And when people first come into weight training and they try new things, what do you feel is one of the limiting factors to go into muscular failure? It's this, right? If I give somebody 15 reps, what they think is true failure is just pain intolerance. They can't handle the pain to go there. And there's fear of I'm going to do something wrong or I'm going to hurt myself. So that's typically the shutdown point. Or there's a limiting belief that they've done enough, or well, the rep said 12, so I stopped. Well, if you can do more, we're going to have to do more, right? And we have to adjust the weight and so on, right? So typically what I see is if you have, and this is where I'm going to get excited for you, Mohammed, when, because I know how Greg, I've coached with Greg for years. I know how we program. If you get a good, I'd say 12 months to 18 months of strength training and then go back to GBC, you will never want to do GBC the rest of your life. Like it is absolutely horrendous. If you have got true strength training behind you and you can take the set because you can handle that load now, it's a different ball game. Like by the B series, you're ready to throw up, basically. So that's why I said, how many of you enjoy that feeling of wanting to throw up? Because GBC will do that for sure. But I find when you go.
No, I said it sounds very taxing.
It is for sure, man. But this is where we have to look at the individual in front and go, well, at certain points, skill acquisition is going to be key for you. If you're a beginner coming in, you're learning new skills. So if I'm going to teach you a new skill, do I want to allow you to do that movement once a week or as many times in the week as possible? As many times as possible. So my son and my daughter, we go to Italy every year. We have family there. I have a home there. And every time we go, like they try and speak Italian, but they use Duolingo at home on the app and they haven't missed a day for a year. And now they're getting way more confident in speaking the language and so on. You can see them like communicating with my aunties and my uncles and so on, but they haven't missed a day for a year. So imagine what that's like with strength training. I'm not saying you have to do every day for a year to learn a movement, but the more frequently you can get it and expose yourself to it, the faster you're going to learn that skill, which means you can now add load to that and get stronger at it. That makes sense, right? So if you're going to learn a skill, full body training is probably the best way to go because you can hit that same body part of that same movement multiple times in a week. If I do a bro split, I do quads on one day and I don't hit it for another week because the bodybuilding magazines say you got to do 25 sets for that muscle part and you only hit it once a week because you're going to recover from it. It takes you a week to recover. True, but you only learn that skill once a week. So it's going to take you longer to maximize that skill. Right. So we have to be smart in the goal too and where you're at with your training age.
Is there a certain number of sets that you should not exceed in those sessions? Like, is it now you're overdoing it, or is that a thing?
Yes and no. There's nuance to that, right? So like I said, were you truly taking sets to proper muscular failure? Probably not, right? So if you're not taking those sets to true muscular failure, you're probably going to need more sets and more repetitions to get the response of hypertrophy that you want. Now, the kicker is you can create fatigue, central nervous system fatigue potentially, which would downregulate motor unit recruitment. But in beginners, we see that you can buffer that pretty well because the intensity isn't there too high. Now, what happens when you're very, very strong and you handle a lot of load and you go into muscular failure, that can have negative effects sometimes where you will truly have fatigue. And it's mainly from the brain. So what happens is you create so much muscle damage that there's a lot of inflammation going to the muscles that you've damaged. So inflammation is a repair thing. So, and those muscles, sorry, one sec. How do you know if you went to complete failure of the muscle and not cause inflammation through a compensation during an intentional slowdown? We'll cover that now. That's a good question, Des. Yeah, so what that does, sorry, going back to muscle damage, what that's going to do, every time you contract a muscle, you create, you release something called calcium ion. You release a calcium ion, it's going to happen. You need calcium to get a muscle to contract. So overproduction of that, typically what happens, the cell becomes overwhelmed with calcium, and then you get a flood into the cytoplasm of the cell, and that causes the muscle damage, right? So what happens when you do get muscle damage, you're always going to get some, but it's an overload of muscle damage we don't want, right? So what happens when that needs to be repaired? Inflammation comes in to repair that. Now, if there's too much muscle damage, the problem you have is the body doesn't just repair the muscle fiber. It just doesn't repair that. It just takes it away, and then you've got to replace it. So essentially, you've got like you're zero, like you're at the same amount of muscle fibers. Does that make sense? So you're not growing, you're just staying the same. So the analogy I typically use is, and this has happened recently on my last trip, it happens that I use this story when I'm teaching students, when I'm away with Ben, when we're teaching students. If there's something in your house, few of you with wives might know, George, I'm sure you know as well. When I would go away in my house, like something, like I'll use my bathroom as an analogy. There would like something needed replacing in my bathroom. It was something small, like a little crack needed repairing, a little bit of paint over it. That's all that was needed to be done. So just a bit of repair. So I go away, leave the house. I'm going to teach in another country. And the next day I get a photograph of my wife and she's ripped the whole bathroom out and we need a new bathroom. Like the whole thing. I'm not talking like the shelf that needed replacing, the whole bathroom. So we had to get a new bathroom. That's what muscle damage is like. It doesn't repair the shelf. It takes the whole bathroom away. And now you just need to replace the bathroom. That's what muscle damage will do. The inflammation does that, and that can last for days. So to repair muscle damage. So what happens when the inflammation is there? The brain goes, I'm in repair mode. I'm not going to allow more motor units to be recruited. So you can still recruit them, but not at a higher rate than if the inflammation wasn't there. Does that make sense? Now, to go to that true muscular failure, typically it's true muscular failure that's really going to drive that muscle damage up because it's always the last few reps that you're going to get that overload of calcium ions. So what I've typically found with beginners and intermediates that don't go to that level of and get what Des put into the chat was the involuntary slowing down of the bar or the barbell. You typically they're about 4 or 5 reps shy of true failure because the pain tolerance, and you can train pain tolerance, by the way, which is why we keep giving you 20 rep sets sometimes, is and the fear factor as well. And the ability of never going there, not what truly knowing what that failure is like, right? So that takes skill, that takes time. So what I typically see with GBC stuff and that short rest period stuff is you never truly get to that point of true overload of muscle damage. So it will be taxing, but you can recover from it. And the best mechanism to drive hypertrophy, which you can get a slight slowing down, is metabolic stress. Now, metabolic stress isn't the direct driver of hypertrophy. It's an indirect driver. So if I gave you short rest periods, Mohammed, or anybody on this call for that matter, and I know George has had them, I know Chris Clark has definitely had them, is where you use short rest periods and you keep doing repetitions after the short rest periods. So typically what you get is like you'll feel a burn in the muscle, you build lactate there. But what's happening, you're building up acidosis and you're building up phosphates in the muscle. And what they typically, so it's basically metabolic byproducts. So typically what they do is they cause the environment to become very sticky and they attach themselves to the heads of the muscle fibers that cause the contractions and it slows them down. So that's basically mechanical tension. So it might not be true muscular failure, but you're still getting that slowing down and some tension to drive it. And that's caused by metabolic stress. So it's what you're getting through the GBC style training. So you can still get a good hypertrophy response from that, but it's very taxing. But the benefit of the metabolic stress side of things, the body can clear that within 24 hours easily, sometimes within hours of the session. Whereas if it's true muscle damage, it can take 3 to 4 to 5 days, depending on the type of training you've done with it. So that's why typically we'll do the metabolic stress stuff first. Makes sense. Skill acquisition stuff first. Multiple exposures through the week first. So you build skill, you build still muscle, and you build cardiovascular systems very quick. Now you're ready for the next stage. Does that make sense? Which you've obviously experienced with Greg, because now he's got you double lower splits. So for somebody who wants fat loss, somebody who wants skill, 3 times a week, full body's great. And then when we want strength, typically I would run, you could still run full body, by all means, you can definitely still run that, depending on the goal that you're training for. But upper lower split is probably one of the best splits to do that with, because you get multiple exposures. It's one that I've run with athletes for the best part of 15 to 20 years, upper lower splits, and you can periodize that out. I've probably programmed a full periodization method with upper lower splits for somebody that starts their athletic development until the day they retire, and they'll never do the same program. But it's all upper lower splits, and it's all sequenced in, so it's already structured. So I know that that person needs speed strength. So let's say it's John, right? John now is going through this phase, needs more speed strength. Boom, he's still on upper lower split, and then we put the specific methods in for that with the right rep ranges. Boom, done. He's good to go, you know, but upper lower split. But now, depending on that upper lower split, I can put specific things into his program where he's still doing a specific WOD at the end of the session and he's still recovering enough. I can manage the volume so he still has his skill days for his shoulder, his handstand shoulder presses, right? So he might have to do walking on his hands and so on. Like, he's an absolute athlete of a man, does all this stuff at CrossFit. He's got to do those things. He's gonna have to do Olympic weightlifting at certain points. That's more explosive strength than speed strength. So those things can be incorporated, right? But upper lower split is probably the best way to go for certain phases that he might go through as well. Right. So the thing with upper lower split too, you have to remember from a hypertrophy point of view and the push-pull leg scenario, instead of a bro split, if I'm looking from a hypertrophy standpoint here, instead of a bro split, where you'll hit once a week that muscle, that's 52 exposures a year using a bro split. If you do an upper lower split or push pull legs, that's 104 exposures a year you get on the muscle. You double, obviously, from once to twice, obviously double. Now, I like the push pull leg scenario because it allows me to hit that body part every 3 to 4 sleeps or so. Right, so I'm really getting some good recovery for that muscle. I'm using volume and intensity, a factor that I can recover from, which is what we should be looking at. And we'll go into that in a second, Des. You got a good question on muscle damage there. But if we're looking at full body splits, and I do use full body splits for hypertrophy as well. If you do 3 times a week full body training for hypertrophy, that's 150 odd times a year that you're going to hit that body part from 104. So typically, the more frequently you hit a muscle, the more it's going to grow. Make sense? Now, there's another way that I like to program full body training, that you're going to hit 7 times in 2 weeks, not 6 times in 2 weeks, and just that one extra session a week. So you think, oh, it's an extra session. Now, this isn't for everybody. This is like for people that have time to do it, recoverability to do it, have the passion to go and do it as well. Just add in that one session over the 2 weeks does this. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. That's 7 times over 14 days. So basically alternate day training. So it's very high frequency. But going from 3 times a week to 7, so add in that one session over 2 weeks, takes you from 150 to about 182 times a year. That's a lot of training sessions. So for hypertrophy, strength, skill, full body, if you want to maximize things very quick over the year, full body is probably the best way to go. Then I would probably shift down into upper lower split based off recovery, based off goal, based off preference. Those are my ideals that I would probably run with. But I love push pull legs. I love push pull legs scenario because I can still get strong, very, very strong, and I can get very muscular doing that as well and recover really well. So that's, I share my favorite training split with you is the push pull legs. Just before we open up to any more questions, I'll answer Des's question. Let me go back through that. How do you know if you went to complete failure of the muscle and not caused inflammation through a compensation during an intentional slowdown? So, muscle damage. If I really wanted to give you the most muscle damage in your life, there's actually been studies done on it. Now, it's done on beginners, so I take that with a grain of salt as well. But if I really wanted to hit as much muscle damage on a muscle as possible, I would give you eccentric training. I would give you high repetitions. I would hold the stretch positions for a long period of time as well. And I would go to muscular failure on every set. Those are the things that are going to drive the most muscle damage. So typically, when I'm programming, I honestly believe you do need high repetitions. The reason I like high repetitions is because one, they're going to train pain tolerance. So pain can be trained. And pain is going to limit how much the body's going to recruit motor units. So if I can train that, then essentially my body's going, you're safe, you're fine, keep going. It's not going to limit how many I do that, or it will to a certain point, but you can override that as you go, right? So that's one factor. Two, high repetitions will train slow twitch muscle fibers first. Now, they're not the best to hypertrophy. The best muscle fibers to hypertrophy are fast twitch muscle fibers. They're typically the biggest and strongest. So you want to build those for hypertrophy. You can start with slow twitch and then bring in the fast twitch afterwards, but you need mechanical tension. You need muscular failure to do that. And that's why I believe a lot of people don't actually get the mechanical tension failure using high reps because they haven't got the tolerance to do that. They always drop off. I used to run a gym with 80% of them were female clientele. And we would ask, and they're newbies to strength training. We want to empower women to strength train and so on. It's fantastic. But we would do challenges for them. We go to failure. And they'd stop. And they go, right, go again. And they do another 20 reps within, like, they'd have 2 seconds rest. And they do another 20 reps. I'm like, you're nowhere near. Like, it's impossible. So my point being is you can use slow twitch fibers, but you'll end up knocking those off and then bringing the fast twitch ones in if you get a failure. The slow twitch fibers help stability of joints. It's a big factor there. Now, the other thing to consider is the capillarization of muscle tissue. So the slow twitch fibers, those high reps are going to bring more, open up more capillaries, is going to get more nutrients into the muscle as well. So we do like to put those things in for those reasons. Now, if we think about muscular contractions, the one thing that in our opinion, it's not even our opinion, it's a fact. The thing that governs muscular contraction is stability. So the more unstable you are, the less the muscle's going to fire. So it makes sense to give you repetitions that are going to train slow twitch fibers to help the stability of the joint. Does that make sense? So I don't just look at hypertrophy through this lens and go, these are the reps, mechanical tension, bang, 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 bang. True. But if I don't set you up and set a foundation, a good base, we're not setting you up for success further down the line. If you've got a solid base, a big, wide base, you've got a higher peak. You'll get a way higher peak. You'll build a bigger house. So I always like to make sure this is covered and we're always dipping back in and building the base. After we've hit another part of the house, we'll come back and solidify the base and then we'll go back again. Make sense? So high reps can be done, but if I'm going to do high reps, I want to make sure I leave reps in reserve. So remember, mechanical tension and muscle damage is going to be driven by muscular failure. With perfect form, by the way. That still has to be perfect form. It's not just sloppy form. It's like true muscular failure with perfect form. So if I'm going to do high reps, I'll typically leave a few reps in reserve. Skill acquisition is built. Stability is built. Great. So now we've set a foundation. If I'm going to use eccentric training, I'll definitely leave reps in reserve or use lower reps. So I'm going to leave that away from high reps because I know if I do high reps and eccentric training, you're going to feel that for a number of days, a number of days. So that's one indication of like, if I put those two things together, we're probably going to be driving a lot of muscle damage. It's not to say that you can't do it, it's to say that you could, but there's things that I would program in to ensure that you can recover from it more effectively. So the way I like to program that is if I'm going to do 8 second eccentrics or 10 second eccentrics, they're very submaximal. So you're typically stronger eccentrically than you are concentrically. So if you're stronger eccentrically and you slow the tempo down, your fast twitch fibers don't have to come into play. So you're still using slow twitch fibers anyway. So they actually increase the stability of joints again. If I really wanted to use the fast twitch fibers for eccentrics, I'd have to use something like eccentric hooks. So has anybody used eccentric hooks before? So basically the eccentric hooks are like the hooks that go over the barbell on the end and they go down and you can put plates at the bottom. So you can overload it. So you could have like 80% of your 1RM on the bar or 85% of your 1RM on the bar, ideally 80. And then you put another 20% on, so it goes to 100%. And then you can put another 20% on, so it goes to 120%. So you're going, you're overloading what you can do for one. Does that make sense? Because you're stronger eccentrically. So now you're doing 120% on the way down, really overloading those. So now your fast twitch fibers have to switch on because this is more than they've ever done. Does that make sense? So they're brought in quick because they're the big guns that need to do the job. And you're stronger eccentrically. So they can lower it for you. But what the hooks do, as soon as they hit the floor, the hooks drop off. And remember, now I've got 80% of the bar. So I can actually lift this. So what you get is the fast twitch fibers kick in, boom, they're activated, and now you can train them. So now you might only do like 5 reps with 80%. So now this is where like the speeds type stuff can come in. So if I put 60% on the bar and I overload eccentrically, how light is that 60% going to feel? Very light once those hooks drop off. And now those fibers go pop, 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 and you get speed. Or explosive strength, I should say. Speed will be a little bit lighter in percentage. So John might be doing things like that for his CrossFit if he needs more speed development, right? So that would be one way that I would use eccentrics. But if I'm doing that eccentric, how many reps did I do, Des? One. So muscle damage, I'm not creating too much muscle damage there. Make sense? So if I'm going to do eccentrics, I'm going to keep the reps low. If I do 10 seconds down, 8 seconds down, 6 seconds down, I'm typically going to be within 3 to 6 repetitions done. I typically don't go over those amount of reps. That allows me to use heavy enough load and allows me to not create as much muscle damage. If I'm going to muscular failure, I'll typically keep it around the 8 and under mark in terms of reps. And then the tempo is pretty moderate. Does that make sense? So typically it's going to be the amount of calcium ions you produce in a session. So, or within a set. So if remember that the more reps you do, the more calcium ions you produce. So remember they're produced by contractions. So if I'm doing 20, 25 reps, you're going to produce more. It's not to say you can't do them, but if I go to failure, it's that tipping point of, it's just an overload then. And typically that overload comes from the last few reps when you go to failure. So I want to stay off those a little bit. So for hypertrophy, I do like to stay within the anywhere from 5 to 8 rep range. Sometimes up to 10, that can be fine too. Andrew's putting some rogue fitness stuff in here. Weight releases. Yeah, rogue do a good set too. If you're in the UK, like, excuse me, Watson, do a good set as well. If you've got home gyms, I might do a little video. I've got some in my gym. I haven't used them for a while, so I'll promise I won't make. I definitely won't be driving more muscle damage in myself. I'll just do one rep for you, Des. Make sure I don't produce them myself. But I'll do a little video just to show you what they look like. But they're very tough to train with. And the other thing to do, like accommodating resistance, can do that too. So if anybody trained with bands before, like on barbells and dumbbells and things, not just like band training that you attach to a rack and go that way. Typically what you'll see with bands, and this can be done for speed development, it can also be done for hypertrophy too, but you'll typically put the bands around the bottom of the rack, attach it to the bar, and as you're pushing up, the band's getting tighter. So that means the bar's slowing down and it's harder for you to produce a contraction there. But the problem you have with bands, as it's getting the stretch, what's going to happen as I try and bring it down? It's going to want to pull the bar into me. So it's actually training you eccentrically as well. So when you're using bands like this for strength training and hypertrophy, you have to be aware that's an eccentric contraction as well. So that can be very muscle damaging. But if you want good hypertrophy, you need mechanical tension. So you need, it's a good word that Des put in that sentence, involuntary. the intent has to be there to keep moving that bar under all circumstances. It shouldn't be, I'm stopping because the rep said. If you can go, you want to keep pushing that bar with everything you have. So your brain should be like, complete the rep, complete the rep, complete the rep. And it's just that the fibers cannot produce any more, and that's mechanical tension. The cross bridging of the muscle contraction just stops. So that's where you'll see, boom, the bar has to drop, or your spotter helps take the bar off you. That's 0 reps in reserve. Can't do any more. Now, can you get away with doing 1 or 2 reps in reserve and still get hypertrophy? Yes. But the reps have to be low enough to do that for the weight to be high enough. So it has to be like 6, 5 reps and maybe 4 reps. You could probably leave a couple of reps in reserve there because the weight's so heavy, you recruit fast twitch fibers very quick. They're initiated from rep number one. So that way you know you recruited the fast twitch fibers. Does that make sense, Des?
Thanks for that, Gab.
Yeah, it's okay, man. But what you have to do though, if you truly want hypertrophy, if you're leaving a couple of reps in reserve, you can get it, but you won't optimize it, in my opinion, from experience. There's a strength development book. It's called The Development of Strength Training by Vladimir Zatsyorsky. So if you're ever struggling to fall asleep, this is a good sleep aid. Buy that book and read it. You will fall asleep within 10 minutes of starting to read it. So if anybody's struggling to sleep, don't worry about magnesium. Don't worry about like all these theanine and all this stuff. Buy that book and you'll be asleep. It's a very dense book. It's very deep into physiology of strength training and so on. But one sentence that's always stuck in my mind, one of my mentors told me this years ago, and I found out where he got it from. If you recruit a muscle fiber, it doesn't mean it's going to be fully trained. You have to fatigue it. Say that again. A recruited muscle fiber is only fully trained when it's fully fatigued. So I could do, for example, fast twitch muscle fibers are great for hypertrophy. Just because they're recruited doesn't mean they're going to hypertrophy. Here's an example. What other way can we get fast twitch fibers to activate? Jump. If you're going for speed and you're doing velocity, that's fast stuff is going to bring in fast twitch muscle fibers. But what causes hypertrophy? Mechanical tension. So you want recruitment and you want fatigue. That make sense? So that you're only going to get maximal hypertrophy if you get that involuntary slowing. You can get recruitment. You can get a slow, you might get a slow speed on one of the reps or two of the reps of that heavy if you're leaving 1 or 2 reps in reserve. So you can get some, but it won't be maximal. It won't be optimal. But what you do keep is recovery. So you can keep hitting it again and again across the week. So it depends on what your training split looks like. So you're going to hit it frequently through the week. You might want, if you're doing low reps, keep a couple in reserve. 1 or 2 all-out sets, done. If you're going frequently through the week, you have to do low amount of sets all out. If you're doing high volume type stuff, you're going to need to leave a couple of reps in reserve. If it's high volume, you're going to create so much muscle damage if you're going to muscular failure on every set. So I think I was describing to Thompson today, I think I described this to George as well in terms of loading. If you've got more sets in, and sometimes the guys that work me will see this where if I program in something like 5 sets of 8 or 6 sets of 6, something like that, and I want strength training to be the main driver. Typically, what I want, and this is where you need to get good at your strength numbers. If you know where your, let's say it's 6 sets of 5. If you know where your 5 RM is, let's say Chris Clark can do 100 kilos on the front squat. You could probably do more, but let's say it's 100 kilos for argument's sake to make maths nice and easy because it's very late here. My brain isn't working well. So we got 100 kilos on the bar, so I know that's his max 5. And I want that to be his 6th set. I want his all out on his 6th, on his last set. Typically, I want a 10% spread from set 1 to set 6. So that means set 1 is 90 kilos. Does that make sense? So he's got quite a few reps in reserve here. So set number 1 at 6 is like, he's probably got 4 or 5 reps in reserve. Is that stimulating? No. He's probably done 1 effective rep. Then set 2, He puts the weight up, 92.5. Now he's going to be heavier. Now he's got one or two effective reps in there, but he's still way off muscular failure and mechanical tension. So what am I getting as I add the weight up? It's getting closer to it. So third set is like 95. Fourth set might be 95 again. Fifth set might be 97.5. Sixth set of five, bang, 100 kilos. All out set. He could probably do one rep. So I don't want to go to failure on a big compound lift. You should probably do one more rep. So what I've done now over those six sets, the first three sets are probably rehearsal sets. So I've produced skill. The last three sets, he's probably got two reps in reserve on set four and set five. The last set is like one rep in reserve, done. So you've got three hard sets for his squat. Make sense? So I'm making sure I got mechanical tension on the last two sets. And he's got recovery ability in there, and he's got strength, and he's got skill. That's the way I would probably run upper lower split. That's on his main lift. Now, what I would probably do in his B series, he's probably felt this already. What am I going to put him on? I'm going to put him on a hack squat. So I've got skill, I've got recruitment. Now I'm going to fatigue it. So I've recruited it, and now I'm going to beat the shit out of it, basically. So now I know. I've got a recruited muscle fiber and I fatigued it, which means I fully trained that muscle fiber. Now I've got hypertrophy. Now I've got strength optimization. So that's why I like training that way. I make sure I want to recruit and then I want to beat him up in a good way, in a positive way. That makes sense? Cool. So I hope that's given you some insight into training splits. On how to do that. And again, we could go into like that was like a nice little overview on mainly hypertrophy and strength, a little bit of fat loss, but then we got things like speed development. And we will be talking about this type of stuff because people think, oh, speed development and so on. I'll leave this with you before we leave today. One of the we talk a lot of about in this community about longevity. Is everybody interested in longevity? You want to live a good, healthy life for as long as possible. But health span is going to be one of those things. One of the predictors of death over 60 years old is hip fractures. Like, I think it's like 60% of people over the age of 60 that break their hip are dead within a year. That's a big number. So I'll think, get you to think about this question. Do you fall slow or do you fall fast? You fall fast. So do you need speed the older you get? 100%. I'd still want to train speed in some element. Doesn't have to be these fast feet with the ladders and so on, like you see all these Instagram influencers using. Speed development can be done in many different ways, but you have to be able to have everything in place to tolerate plyometrics, to tolerate that ground reaction, to jump and explode and do all those different things. And have the ability to land and decelerate yourself. Now, what are you going to need to precede that? So remember the foundation of speed and plyometrics and speed development is maximal strength. If you haven't got maximal strength, there's no place for speed. There's no way you can generate enough force or decelerate the force that's being applied to you, right? Or be able to, if you're going to fall, step out and get your foot and decelerate that pretty well through the hip and through the foot and the ankle. So this is why we will be talking about speed development. And this is something we're going to be doing in Costa Rica, where we are going to train for little things like that as well. We're going to prep you and give you training sessions where we're going to work on strength, but in that same session, we're going to show you what it's going to feel like to work for speed as well. So typically speed, the way we start is explosive strength is one of them, which John's doing with his CrossFit right now. The other one obviously is speed strength, which is an all of these have different elements of percentage as well. Like you can't just go and try and lift it as maximally as possible because there's certain parts of different aspects of speed that need to be done at different firing rates. So what I mean by that is if I'm using a barbell, explosive strength will have the barbell moving between 0.7 to 1 meter per second. Speed strength is probably more like 1 to 1.3 to 1.5 meters per second. So you can actually use like implements on the bar to see how fast you're moving that bar. And if you fall out of that range, you're not training that aspect of speed. So that's when the set stops, right? So we can predict those things based off the bar speed. But you need good tissue integrity. You need good tendon strength. Things like that come from maximal strength training. So we have to have you precede that first. So that's why I always say, like, we're gonna. So I actually spoke about this to Thompson today on our call. We've actually put 5 kilos on his frame in the last 4 to 5 months. So a kilo a month, that's pretty good. So now he's added that cross-sectional area of muscle on his body. We've now got the opportunity to make that strong. So now he's going to be going into a good 12, 16, 24 weeks of strength training. Then we're going to look at what his body's like. Do we need a little bit of fat loss? Do we need a little bit more strength training? Or can we go into a little bit of explosive strength work to improve maximal strength more? So there's sequences to this stuff. Once he's strong, now we might be in a better place to add more hypertrophy. Because what does strength training do? It allows you to recruit more fast twitch motor units. So you can see, like, the elements that we shift and push around and develop in the base and then build your peak. And that all comes from the weekly split you can do. George, thanks, brother. Get well. Keep me posted, brother. I'll speak to you soon. So yeah, I hope that gives some insights, boys, into the weekly splits and the way my mind works. I'm sure the other boys on the team do as well. I know Andrew, is Andrew still on? I think he's had to leave. He's gonna have to shoot. But boys, thank you so much for your time today. I'm gonna hit the sack in a second, and yeah, have a great rest of your week,
Thanks,
John.
Ben.
Keep up the work in that CrossFit gym, brother. You're doing superb.
Thank you.
Gaz, good to see you. Mohammed, keep up the good work, man. I'm
Thank you.
ready for your progress pics to come in from Greg. He's been telling me good things.
Yes, we'll see you in Tampa, hopefully.
Brilliant, man.
Take care.
Chris, I'll speak to you tomorrow on a call, brother. Take care. Des, have a good one, man.
Take care.
Nice, Thompson. Bye, John.